everybody. My name is Don, and I'm an alcoholic and drug addict with over 20 years of sober recovery. You're listening to Drunks, a podcast centered on recovery from alcoholism and addiction. Today, our guest is...
Mike. I'm an alcoholic, drug addict.
Well, let me start out by thanking you for coming by, Mike. It's an honor to have you here.
I wouldn't go that far.
So I just ask what the drunk or drug-a-log is with my people. So I'll just do that. When did you start drinking? Where did you go wrong?
I started drinking in high school, but then the drugs. I was back in the hippie days.
Yeah.
And, you know, pot. And it started out, you know, the pot, the mescaline, psychedelics, the whole ball of wax. Then it kind of worked into coke. And then the coke worked into heroin, then the pills, and basically whatever I could get. But my choice was heroin and coke.
Yeah.
And then get into shooting it. I got into that. And I remember, this was years and years later, having a meltdown in a treatment when they told me that it got into your system quicker by smoking it than shooting it. And I mean, a day like today, I would be wearing flannel shirts because I didn't want anybody to see my arms.
Yeah.
And stuff. And then I got mad one night because, you know, you're waiting around. And then I says, I'm quitting and going. And you can't afford it. You were always in money trouble anyway.
Yeah, so. You always were.
So I walked in the liquor store, bought a fifth, and that was bad. I mean, I thought I could come down from heroin by drinking liquor and stuff. And I ended up in detox. It was probably 6 months later, and it was not fun the first time I went. But
how old were you?
Well, at that time, I was in my... probably 80s. I was probably in my early 30s before it all caught up with me.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can function pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, we learn to function. It doesn't matter how bad the circumstances are. You know, I could keep jobs and stuff for so long. And it didn't get real out of control until mid-80s. I mean, when I was in my late 30s. Mid-30s it started. Then I started getting in trouble. OWIs. I was getting OWIs.
How many of those did you get?
Five or six. Lost my license. Hell, one time they sent me a letter. This DOT took my license away, said for a year, and the state came back and nailed me on a habitual violator. Took it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone into each, my insurance had a deal that said I had to go to detox first, no matter what. I was going into treatments, I'd been into, I think I was in four or five treatments. But in the 90s, I went into detox. And a good friend of mine, which he's dead now, but helped me a lot. He took me to a halfway house.
Was this after detox?
Yes, after he picked me up from detox, took me to this house, never said where he was taking me. I thought, I owned the house at that time. And I says, where are you going? He says, pulled up in the parking lot, says, this is your new home. I said, no, you take me home now. He says, you can't go home until you get straightened out. I went into this place, and I paced back and forth from front door to the back door. It was right on the edge of East Village. And I was trying to make up my mind, do I go to the bar downtown or to the bar up a couple blocks away.
Big decisions.
Yeah. And the director came in, looked at me and says, sit your ass down. And I looked at him and I thought, who the hell are you talking to? And I sat down and I thought, okay, I'm going to stay here for the weekend. And that's it. Then I'm getting out of here until I figure out my next move. Well, my next move, I ended up, I don't know, something changed over the weekend. I says, I'm going to give this a chance. And I went, ended up staying there 9 months.
At the halfway house.
I could come and go. He let me stay. He just, the director came to me and he said, you can stay as long as you want.
Because you're showing some promise?
I had showed a lot. I decided I wanted to quit. I remember sitting there one night and it was like somebody lifted a house off my back when I decided I'm going to give this a chance this time. I'd been in and out of treatments. This was in the 90s. I'd been in and out, early 90s, because my daughters were both real young.
Oh, you were married at the time.
I've been married every time. Divorced twice, too. You know, it's like I told a guy yesterday, I said, we didn't have a problem getting jobs. We had a problem keeping them.
Yeah.
And would get good jobs, you know. It wasn't hard to get a good job. I always would joke about it. I know how to make a lot of money. I just don't know how to keep it. Because I was blowing it all, you know. You go out every night drinking, buying the drugs and stuff to go along with it.
Did you say something, you said something that I heard you, that you relapsed or?
Yes, I had almost 10 years clean after I left the house, halfway house. And I had 10 years clean, not quite 10 years. Things were a little shaky at home and stuff. And the wife was going to California and I thought, I convinced myself I could drink.
She was leaving and going?
No, she was going there during Christmas.
Oh, I see.
And
so when the cat's away,
the mice will play. I went to the liquor store the day she left, walked in the liquor store, and it was, I come out and stood beside my car, and I said, that's the weirdest feeling I ever had. It felt like I was in there yesterday.
Yeah.
That should have been my first sign.
Should have been a hint.
A little hint. It was like somebody hitting you in the head with a hammer.
Would you buy like a fifth of whiskey or something?
Yep. That was my drink. Black Velvet, you know.
Yeah.
And went home, drank half of it, said, see, I can control it.
Uh-huh.
I only drank half of it. Now, my wife now looks at me and laughs and she says, Mike, normal people don't drink a half a fifth and say they can control it. She can keep me reeled in.
I know. My wife said, like, similar to, she'll drink gin and tonic about two a year.
That's my wife drinks now, too.
She'll drink the gin and tonic and, like, two-thirds of it will be gone and she'll just set it down because she's not, you know. And I say to her, how do you do that?
Yeah, see, that's, when I married my wife now, the men at the house that I was working at, the vets, they just come unglued that I was marrying somebody that was drinking. And I says, listen, here's the deal. My wife can drink two beers, stop, and not drink again for a month. I said, if I could do that, I'd still be drinking and I wouldn't be standing here teaching a class.
Yeah.
You know, but they can do that. They don't want the buzz. That's all we drank for.
Yeah.
You know, I knew if I took cocaine, pot, drink, this, I knew where I'd be.
Yeah, I had one counselor say that people don't realize that the sun rises in our stomachs when you know. I said, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and this is where I want to be, up here. You know, but we couldn't stop once we got up there. We kept going.
Right. Every time.
You'd get there, but trying to stay there.
Yeah, there's a comedian, he said, you do cocaine, you feel like a new man, and then the new man needs cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, and
then I ran into an old friend one night, and we went. I had a new place out in Urbandale, new house. Good job. Cars, you know, every, yeah, every the American, yeah. I ran into him one night, and he says, let's go to this house. I know where this house is. And I took a hit of crack, and I turned around and looked at him, and I said, I'm going to lose everything. And kept doing it until I did.
Wow.
And stuff. And then...
So when was... And I'm, like, confused about the timeline. Was this in the 90s now?
No, that would have been right around 2000.
Uh-huh.
That's when I kind of skipped up. Huh?
That's when I went down.
Yeah, that would have been right around 2000. I was doing good. I'd gone back to coaching. And, I mean, I was coaching softball and stuff, girls softball. And never, ever dreamt... everything would just go straight downhill.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you think you're going to control it this time, or it's going to be different this time.
It's good. Well, I think you think, I got 10 years clean. I'm never going to be the way I was. I can catch it before that.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're so far into it. 2 days later, I was drinking a fifth a day again.
Yeah.
Then you throw, and then I'd use the liquor for the to take the edge off on the crack, you know, because I'd be getting so tweaked out. And the other problem was, back then I could get my hands on money, you know.
Yeah.
you can start for a while, you can go in, hey, borrow money. I could walk in and get $2,000 on my name, you know. I hit 3-4 places like that. When me and my wife now got together, I was working two jobs to pay it all back.
Did you pay it all back?
Yep. I paid every penny of it back. They'd call me. I'm sitting, we're watching TV one night, get a phone rings. Wife hands me the phone. Guy says, I had this loan with him. I says, I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Did you?
No.
Okay.
I did not. But the week before, I'd gone by this little loan company clear out in Urbandale, and I happened to look over there, and I thought, nah, you didn't. I did.
Uh-huh.
And I said, send me the paperwork. When I get off the phone, the wife looks at me, and she says, Mike, how can you not know you had a loan with this? And I said, you would have had to know the shape I was in. I had one thing in mind, getting money, getting drugs, getting booze, you know, and I was still trying to work, but it got to work.
Was this after your 10-year period of sobriety?
Yeah.
So it just goes to show what they tell us is that it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And it's not that far from, in a week you're going to catch up to 10 years of sobriety and then some.
And a lot more.
And a lot more.
By the time it was all over, I was sleeping under a bridge.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you about. How long did you stay under that bridge?
A couple weeks. I was kind of, you know, hopping. I was sleeping out of my van all summer.
Uh-huh.
I got a bright idea one day. I was about out of money, and I said, I'll sell my van. I'll never forget, but I sold my van, and as he's driving down the street, I'm looking, I says, you just sold your house, too.
Yeah, your bedroom.
Uh-huh. I'd stay in out the rest areas. I'd sleep out there. You know, I got to know her. I'd go in and clean restrooms, and she'd bring food to me because I wasn't spending what money I had. Gas, booze, that was it, and stuff. And then I got thrown out of a hotel because I ran out of money. Raining like hell. My brother picked me up, drove along down 6th Avenue, got to Birdland Drive, went under a bridge. He says, which bridge do you want? And I says, 2nd Avenue one, that's closer to the liquor store. And I stayed down there, I guess maybe a couple weeks, and then I was sitting there, I had about 3/4 of a fifth left one day, and I said, you need to shit or get off the pot. I said, you either got to decide you want to live this life out here or clean your act up. Drank the fifth down, walked up to the White House, and that was the last time I drank, and that was 2001.
Mike, we got to take a commercial break here, if you can stand by.
Yeah.
were telling me about how you relapsed. Now you're winding up under a bridge, mm-hmm. and you've decided that you're going to like try to get clean and sober again.
Yeah, and I did. I went. I wasn't big on meetings to start with, and once I got clean, I went every day for a year. I was collecting unemployment at the time. Mm-hmm. Company I was with, luckily, had closed down. So I went every day. And then I moved in with my parents and stuff. They let me stay there and stuff. And I told them when I moved in, I said, it's going to be rough, man, for, you know, 2-3 weeks.
This is early on in your...
9-11, 2001. It was the first day I was sober.
And you've been sober since?
Yep. And then I started working with vets and stuff the last 10 years.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Just
real quick, though, I looked at your business card. It said homeless.
Yeah.
Were you working a drug angle with them, or were you working
It was a grant per diem, a two-year program for veterans. We worked with the VA. We had a house. And if you had drug alcohol, we would get them with drug alcohol, PTSD, mental health. They had 2 years, most of them come in financially buried with drinking. They had rules that no drinking. We could test you, drop you. They had to find a job. They had to start a savings account and start trying to clean up some of their messes. The big deal was to get back utilities paid, anything that would keep them from getting an apartment. You wanted to get them to get it paid off. A lot of them wanted to get their license back first.
Driver's license.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to get that back, but it's what I would try to explain to them. You can't afford a car.
Yeah.
I mean, and they would go out and get expensive phones and stuff. The program was a good program. We had a lot of people to come out of it that did real good. We got some kids that went on to college and got their degree. And it's been a good program and stuff. But we closed down in February. We lost our house. But I enjoyed doing that because it helped me and my program too.
Well, it's kind of like that 12th step where once you're like secure in your own sobriety, right. You go out and try to
you can somebody. Help see I'm not a big fan of sponsors.
Me neither.
And I tell you, it's too much of an ego trip for a lot of them.
I agree.
I'm more get a group of people that you can trust, that you know good. I'm lucky. I got some real good friends that I can pick up the phone, call them, saying, hey, I'm having troubles today. This is bothering me or this is going on in my life. It's not hard for me to stay sober anymore because I know exactly where my drinking and using will take me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the choice I can make now. Do I want to give up everything I've worked for, the house, the wife, everything, getting your credit all straightened out where I can use a credit card, get a credit card, have a credit card.
Uh-huh.
Do I want to give all that up to go have a drink or a hit? And I don't. You know, it takes a long time. I got three daughters, and it takes a long time to get their trust back. When I first got clean again, man, you'd hear how long. In the back of their head, and which you can't blame them.
Yeah, a junkie, someone will steal your wallet and then help you look for it.
Yeah,
you know
exactly.
And here you are, you know, telling them, this time's for real. You know,
yeah.
Well, you know, that's bullshit.
Yeah, until, like I used to try to explain to people, you don't have to tell them how good you're doing. People will see it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and there's a lot more to getting sober than people realize. Our thinking got screwed up, I was telling you earlier.
Our brain gets rewired from all the...
Well, and I'll give you a story because I told it to a psychiatrist and he just rolled. He says, it's one of the best I ever heard, Mike. I was in Omaha with my wife I was going to buy her necklace. I might have told you this. No. And it was a beautiful necklace, but it was red coral, which I didn't know that much about at the time. I tell the, they wanted $400 for it, and I said, I'm going to get this for your birthday. And I get the lady down to $280. And if you've ever been in the old market over there in Omaha, it's a lot of boutiques and cobblestone streets and stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I says, I'll come back in a while. Let me think about it. We're walking out of the store, and I look at my wife, and I said, we're crossing the street, and I says, Lynette, I says, the one problem is with that necklace, it's not a diamond, and if we ever had to pawn it, I don't know if anybody would know what we had. And she stopped right in the middle of the street and looked at me, and she says, Mike, normal people don't buy somebody a gift and then talk about pawning it. I said, no, everybody pawns stuff. In my head, I'd use those places so much, I thought. And then that's when I started doing classes on our thinking. We have to change all our thinking. A lot of our thinking got out there. What we thought was all
thinking.
Yeah, what we thought was right wasn't.
Right.
You know, just because we were doing it and stuff. Like I said, we learned to survive. We never learned how to live. You know, we could survive, and so that's, and that I do classes on decision making too. If you look back in your life, your decisions started at a young age, making bad decisions.
Well, I used to tell my little leaguers that life was a series of choices, and you choose one thing, you know, you have to choose the bad with the good. You don't just get to cherry pick the good.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of us like to do the good and or whatever.
Well, I think we can get into, like I tell my daughters, you're going to make bad decisions in life without drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, so you don't need the drugs and alcohol helping your decision-making along, you know, because you will. It's like when I work with young kids, I go out to the jail and I feel bad for them because they have a whole different thinking. You know, it's like this is a rite of passage, the drinking and everything.
Yeah.
You know, because our society has made it that way.
Indeed.
You know, and you know, you got to drink to watch a football game. You got to drink for the 4th of July. I remember being in a treatment, and when they told me I couldn't drink at 4th of July, I said, no. I says, you got this all wrong. Everybody drinks on the 4th of July. But that's how you get. And then, see, we get so dependent on alcohol, we don't know what to do without drinking and how to have fun. I remember when they told me that in treatment, you have to learn how to have fun again.
Yeah.
Without drinking.
Yeah, I thought my social life at least was over when I got sober.
Everybody
You know, and I just like couldn't get behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't go back to drinking or anything because, you know, I made a vow that I was going to stay on the straight and narrow, but still, I, you know, the other night I was at a great big party and, you know, it didn't bother me at all that everyone's slopping it back. As a matter of fact, I felt a little superior to everybody, you know, they're all like drunk and carrying on.
I feel. The one thing I like about it, I can get up and leave when I want. If it starts bothering me, I just tell the wife it's time to go.
Yeah.
And she's real good about it. Okay.
Getting up and leaving.
Yeah. You know, and that's the nice part. I get people that ask me about how come you don't drink, and I just tell them, I got in too much trouble. I didn't like being in jail all the time. You know, I didn't like not having my driver's license, losing jobs. Not people can't trust you.
Yeah, I tell them if I drink that beer, I'll come to in Singapore with a 10-day beard and a broken nose.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean,
no idea how I got there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't miss it. Every once in a while, I would like to sit down with people, you know, when they're out. But I know what happened. I might be able to sit down today with you and have a beer.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, I'll be at the liquor store buying a fifth.
Right.
So I don't even go there.
You know, we're starting to run out of time, but I wanted to ask your opinion of something about what if someone comes to you and they, you know, and they want to quit, but they're still using. I mean, how do you deal with that? What's your advice on that?
I tell them, when you get serious, come back.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like when I get parents that call me.
Right.
I says, you have him, your son, call me.
Yes.
I says, you know, I don't have a magic wand, you know, to wave over your head and help you. It's got to be, you got to make up your mind. You want to change your life.
It comes from the soul, and it's got to be from the user. He's got to do it.
She's exactly. Gotta do it. They got to make up their mind. You know, it's like you, what you had to do, what I had to do. It's, do I want to change? It's what a lot of people don't realize, how much change they got to make. That they've been doing it for so long, there's a lot of change that's got to be made in there. You know, it's, you don't go in, you know, when they say playgrounds, people and all that, I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, you know, so.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for stopping by. We totally appreciate it. Well, we're out of time, folks. Remember, don't drink or use no matter what, and keep coming back. Hello, everybody. My name is Don, and I'm an alcoholic and drug addict with over 20 years of sober recovery. You're listening to Drunks, a podcast centered on recovery from alcoholism and addiction. Today, our guest is...
Mike. I'm an alcoholic, drug addict.
Well, let me start out by thanking you for coming by, Mike. It's an honor to have you here.
I wouldn't go that far.
So I just ask what the drunk or drug-a-log is with my people. So I'll just do that. When did you start drinking? Where did you go wrong?
I started drinking in high school, but then the drugs. I was back in the hippie days.
Yeah.
And, you know, pot. And it started out, you know, the pot, the mescaline, psychedelics, the whole ball of wax. Then it kind of worked into coke. And then the coke worked into heroin, then the pills, and basically whatever I could get. But my choice was heroin and coke.
Yeah.
And then get into shooting it. I got into that. And I remember, this was years and years later, having a meltdown in a treatment when they told me that it got into your system quicker by smoking it than shooting it. And I mean, a day like today, I would be wearing flannel shirts because I didn't want anybody to see my arms and stuff. And then I got mad one night because, you know, you're waiting around. And then I says, I'm quitting and going, and you can't afford it. You were always in money trouble anyway.
Yeah, so. You always were.
So I walked in the liquor store, bought a fifth, and that was bad. I mean, I thought I could come down from heroin by drinking liquor and stuff. And I ended up in detox. It was probably 6 months later, and it was not fun the first time I went. But
how old were you?
Well, at that time, I was in my... probably 80s. I was probably in my early 30s before it all caught up with me.
Uh-huh.
You know, we can function pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, we learn to function. It doesn't matter how bad the circumstances are. You know, I could keep jobs and stuff for so long. And it didn't get real out of control until mid-80s. I mean, when I was in my late 30s. Mid-30s it started. Then I started getting in trouble. OWIs. I was getting OWIs.
How many of those did you get?
Five or six. Lost my license. Hell, one time they sent me a letter. This DOT took my license away, said for a year, and the state came back and nailed me on a habitual violator. Took it for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gone into my insurance had a deal that said I had to go to detox first, no matter what. If I was going into treatments, I'd been into, I think I was in 4 or 5 treatments. But in the 90s, I went into detox. And a good friend of mine, which he's dead now, but helped me a lot. He took me to a halfway house.
Was this after detox?
Yes, after he picked me up from detox. Took me to this house, never said where he was taking me. I thought I owned the house at that time. And I says, "Where are you going?" He says, pulled up in the parking lot, says, "This is your new home." I said, "No. You take me home now." He says, "You can't go home until you get straightened out." I went into this place and I paced back and forth from the front door to the back door. It was right on the edge of East Village. And I was trying to make up my mind, do I go to the bar downtown or to the bar up a couple blocks away?
Big decisions.
Yeah. And the director came in, looked at me and says, "Sit your ass down." And I looked at him and I thought, "Who the hell are you talking to?" And I sat down and I thought, okay, I'm going to stay here for the weekend. And that's it. Then I'm getting out of here until I figure out my next move. Well, my next move, I ended up, I don't know, something changed over the weekend. I says, I'm going to give this a chance. And I went, ended up staying there 9 months.
At the halfway house.
I could come and go. He let me stay. He just, the director came to me and he said, "You can stay as long as you want."
Because you're showing some promise?
I had showed a lot. I decided I wanted to quit. I remember sitting there one night and it was like somebody lifted a house off my back when I decided I'm going to give this a chance this time. I'd been in and out of treatments. This was in the 90s. I'd been in and out, early 90s, because my daughters were both real young.
Oh, you were married at the time.
I've been married every time. Divorced twice, too. You know, it's like I told a guy yesterday, I said, we didn't have a problem getting jobs. We had a problem keeping them.
Yeah.
And would get good jobs, you know. It wasn't hard to get a good job. I always would joke about it. I know how to make a lot of money. I just don't know how to keep it. Because I was blowing it all, you know. You go out every night drinking, buying the drugs and stuff to go along with it.
Did you say something, you said something that I heard you, that you relapsed or?
Yes, I had almost 10 years clean after I left the house, halfway house. And I had 10 years clean, not quite 10 years. Things were a little shaky at home and stuff. And the wife was going to California and I thought, I convinced myself I could drink.
She was leaving and going?
No, she was going there during Christmas.
Oh, I see.
And
so were the cats away?
The mice will play. I went to the liquor store the day she left, walked in the liquor store, and it was, I come out and stood beside my car, and I said, that's the weirdest feeling I ever had. It felt like I was in there yesterday.
Yeah.
That should have been my first sign.
Should have been a hint.
A little hint. It was like somebody hitting you in the head with a hammer.
Would you buy like a fifth of whiskey or something?
Yep. That was my drink. Black Velvet, you know.
Yeah.
And went home, drank half of it, said, see, I can control it. I only drank half of it. Now, my wife now looks at me and laughs and she says, Mike, normal people don't drink a half a fifth and say they can control it. She can keep me reeled in.
I know. My wife said, like, similar to, she'll drink gin and tonic about 2 a year.
That's my wife drinks now, too.
She'll drink the gin and tonic and, like, 2/3 of it will be gone and she'll just set it down because she's not, you know, And I say to her, how do you do that?
Yeah, see, that's when I married my wife now, the men at the house that I was working at, the vets, they just come unglued that I was marrying somebody that was drinking. And I says, listen, here's the deal. My wife can drink 2 beers, stop, and not drink again for a month. Uh-huh. I said, if I could do that, I'd still be drinking and I wouldn't be standing here teaching a class.
Yeah.
You know, but they can do that. They don't want the buzz. That's all we drank for.
Yeah.
You know, I knew if I took cocaine, pot, drink, this, I knew where I'd be.
Yeah, I had one counselor say that people don't realize that the sun rises in our stomachs when you know. I said, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and this is where I want to be, up here. You know, but we couldn't stop once we got up there. We kept going.
Right. Every time.
You'd get there, but trying to stay there.
Yeah, there's a comedian, he said, you do cocaine, you feel like a new man, and then the new man needs cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, and
then I ran into an old friend one night, and we went. I had a new place out in Urbandale, new house. Good job. Cars, you know, the American. Yeah. I ran into him one night and he says, let's go to this house. I know where this house is. And I took a hit of crack and I turned around and looked at him and I said, I'm going to lose everything. And kept doing it until I did.
Wow.
And stuff, and then.
So when was? And I'm like confused about the timeline. Was this in the 90s now?
No, that would have been right around 2000.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I kind of skipped up, huh?
That's when I went down.
Yeah, that would have been right around 2000. I was doing good. I'd gone back to coaching, and I mean, I was coaching softball and stuff, girls softball, and never ever dreamt. Everything would just go straight downhill.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you think you're going to control it this time, or it's going to be different this time.
Well, I think you think, I got 10 years clean. I'm never going to be the way I was. I can catch it before that.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're so far into it. 2 days later, I was drinking a fifth a day again.
Yeah.
Then you throw, and then I'd use the liquor for the to take the edge off on the crack, you know, because I'd be getting so tweaked out. And the other problem was back then I could get my hands on money, you know. You can start for a while, you can go in, hey, borrow money. I could walk in and get $2,000 on my name, you know. I hit 3-4 places like that. When me and my wife now got together, I was working 2 jobs to pay it all back.
Did you pay it all back?
Yep. I paid every penny of it back. They'd call me. We're watching TV one night. Get a phone rings. Wife hands me the phone. Guy says, I had this loan with him. I says, I don't have a clue what you're talking about.
Did you?
No.
Okay.
I did not. But the week before, I'd gone by this little loan company clear out in Urbandale, and I happened to look over there, and I thought, nah, you didn't. I did.
Uh-huh.
And I said, send me the paperwork. When I get off the phone, the wife looks at me, and she says, Mike, how can you not know you had a loan with this? And I said, you would have had to know the shape I was in. I had one thing in mind, getting money, getting drugs, getting booze, you know, and I was still trying to work, but it got to work.
Was this after your 10-year period of sobriety?
Yeah.
So it just goes to show what they tell us is that it's a slippery slope.
Yeah.
And it's not that far from, in a week you're going to catch up to 10 years of sobriety and then some.
And a lot more. By the time it was all over, I was sleeping under a bridge.
Oh, that's what I wanted to ask you about. How long did you stay under that bridge?
A couple weeks. I was kind of, you know, hopping. I was sleeping out of my van all summer.
Uh-huh.
I got a bright idea one day. I was about out of money, and I said, I'll sell my van. I'll never forget, but I sold my van, and as he's driving down the street, I'm looking, I says, You just sold your house too.
Yeah, your bedroom.
I'd stay in out the rest areas. I'd sleep out there. You know, I got to know her. I'd go in and clean restrooms, and she'd bring food to me because I wasn't spending what money I had. Gas, booze, that was it. And stuff. And then I got thrown out of a hotel because I ran out of money. Raining like hell. My brother picked me up, drove along down 6th Avenue, got to Birdland Drive, went under a bridge. He says, "Which bridge do you want?" And I says, "2nd Avenue one, that's closer to the liquor store. And I stayed down there, I guess maybe a couple weeks. And then I was sitting there, I had about 3/4 of a fifth left one day. And I said, "You need to shit or get off the pot." I said, "You either got to decide you want to live this life out here or clean your act up." Drank the fifth down, walked up to the White House. That was the last time I drank, and that was 2001.
Mike, we got to take a commercial break here, if you can stand by.
Yeah.
You were telling me about how you relapsed. Now you're winding up under a bridge. And you've decided that you're going to like try to get clean and sober again.
Yeah, and I did. I went to, I wasn't big on meetings to start with. And once I got clean, I went every day for a year. I was collecting unemployment at the time. Mm-hmm. Company I was with, luckily, had closed down. So I went every day. And then I moved in with my parents and stuff. They let me stay there. And stuff. And I told him when I moved in, I said, "It's going to be rough, man, for, you know, 2-3 weeks.
This is early on in your...
9-11, 2001. It was the first day I was sober.
And you've been sober since?
Yep. And then I started working with vets and stuff the last 10 years.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Just
real quick, though. I looked at your business card. It said homeless.
Yeah.
So were you working a drug angle with them, or you working
I was working, it was for, it was a grant per diem, a two-year program for veterans. We worked with the VA. We had a house, and you were a vet, you could, if you had drug alcohol, we would get them with drug alcohol, PTSD, mental health. They had 2 years, most of them come in financially buried with drinking. They had rules that no drinking. We could test you, drop you. They had to find a job. They had to start a savings account and start trying to clean up some of their messes. The big deal was to get back utilities paid, anything that would keep them from getting an apartment. You wanted to get them to get it paid off. A lot of them wanted to get their license back first.
Driver's license.
Mm-hmm. They wanted to get that back, but it's what I would try to explain to them, you can't afford a car.
Yeah.
I mean, and they would go out and get expensive phones and stuff. The program was a good program. We had a lot of people to come out of it that did real good. We got some kids that went on to college and got their degree, and it's been a good program and stuff. But we closed down in February. We lost our house, but I enjoyed doing that because it helped me in my program too.
Well, it's kind of like that 12th step where once you're like secure in your own sobriety, right, you go out and try to.
You can help. See, I'm not a big fan of sponsors.
Me neither.
And I tell you, it's too much of an ego trip for a lot of them.
I agree.
I'm more get a group of people that you can trust, that you know. I'm lucky. I got some real good friends that I can pick up the phone, call them, saying, "Hey, I'm having troubles today. This is bothering me, or this is going on in my life." It's not hard for me to stay sober anymore because I know exactly where my drinking and using will take me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the choice I can make now. Do I want to give up everything I've worked for, the house, the wife, everything, getting your credit all straightened out where I can use a credit card, get a credit card, have a credit card? Do I want to give all that up to go have a drink or a hit? And I don't. You know, it takes a long time. I got three daughters, and it takes a long time to get their trust back. When I first got clean again, man, I'd hear, you know, you'd hear how long, you know, in the back of their head, and which you can't blame them.
Yeah, a junkie, someone will steal your wallet and then help you look for it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And here you are, you know, telling them, this time's for real. You know,
yeah.
Well, you know, that's bullshit.
Yeah, until, like I used to try to explain to people, you don't have to tell them how good you're doing. People will see it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, and there's a lot more to getting sober than people realize. Our thinking got screwed up, I was telling you earlier.
Our brain gets rewired from all the...
Well, and I'll give you a story because I told it to a psychiatrist and he just rolled. He says, it's one of the best I ever heard, Mike. I was in Omaha with my wife. I was going to buy her a necklace. I might have told you this. No. And it was a beautiful necklace, but it was red coral, which I didn't know that much about at the time. I tell the, they wanted $400 for it, and I said, I'm going to get this for your birthday. And I get the lady down to $280. And if you've ever been in the old market over there in Omaha, it's a lot of boutiques and cobblestone streets and stuff.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And I says, I'll come back in a while. Let me think about it. We're walking out of the store, and I look at my wife, and I said, we're crossing the street, and I says, Lynette, I says, the one problem is with that necklace, it's not a diamond. And if we ever had to pawn it, I don't know if anybody would know what we had. And she stopped right in the middle of the street and looked at me and she says, Mike, normal people don't buy somebody a gift and then talk about pawning it. I said, no, everybody pawns stuff. In my head, I'd use those places so much, I thought. And then that's when I started doing classes on our thinking. We have to change all our thinking. A lot of our thinking got out there. What we thought was all
thinking.
Yeah, what we thought was right wasn't.
Right.
You know, just because we were doing it and stuff. Like I said, we learned to survive. We never learned how to live. You know, we could survive. And so I do classes on decision making too. If you look back in your life, your decisions started at a young age, making bad decisions.
Well, I used to tell my little leaguers that life was a series of choices, and you choose one thing, you know, you have to choose the bad with the good. You don't just get to cherry pick the good.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of us like to do the good and or whatever.
Well, I think we can get into, like I tell my daughters, you're going to make bad decisions in life without drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
I mean, so you don't need the drugs and alcohol helping your decision-making along, you know, because you will. It's like when I work with young kids, I go out to the jail, and I feel bad for them because they have a whole different thinking. You know, it's like this is a rite of passage, the drinking and everything.
Yeah.
You know, because our society has made it that way.
Indeed.
You know, and you know, you got to drink to watch a football game. You got to drink for the 4th of July. I remember being in a treatment, and when they told me I couldn't drink at 4th of July, I said, no, 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 no. I said, you got this all wrong. Everybody drinks on the 4th of July. But that's how you get. And then, see, we get so dependent on alcohol, we don't know what to do without drinking and how to have fun. I remember when they told me that in treatment, you have to learn how to have fun again.
Yeah.
Without drinking.
Yeah, I thought my social life at least was over when I got sober.
Everybody
You know, and I just like couldn't get behind it.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't go back to drinking or anything because, you know, I made a vow that I was going to stay on the straight and narrow, but But still, I you know, the other night I was at a great big party, and I, you know, it didn't bother me at all that everyone's slopping it back. As a matter of fact, I felt a little superior to everybody. You know, they're all like drunk and carrying on.
I feel the one thing I like about it, I can get up and leave when I want. If it starts bothering me, I just tell the wife it's time to go.
Yeah,
and she's real good about it. Okay,
getting up and leaving.
Yeah, you know, and that's the nice part. I get people that ask me about how come you don't drink, and I just tell them, I got in too much trouble. I didn't like being in jail all the time. You know, I didn't like not having my driver's license, losing jobs. Not, people can't trust you.
Yeah, I tell them, if I drink that beer, I'll come to in Singapore with a 10-day beard and a broken nose.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean,
no idea how I got there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't miss it. Every once in a while, I would like to sit down with people, you know, when they're out, but I know what happened. I might be able to sit down today with you and have a beer.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, I'll be at the liquor store buying a fifth.
Right.
So I don't even go there.
You know, we're starting to run out of time, but I wanted to ask your opinion of something about, what if someone comes to you and they, you know, and they want to quit, but they're still using? I mean, how do you deal with that? What's your advice on that?
I tell them, when you get serious, come back.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like when I get parents that call me.
Right.
I says, you have him, your son, call me.
Yes.
I says, you know, I don't have a magic wand, you know, to wave over your head and help you. It's got to be, you got to make up your mind. You want to change your life.
It comes from the soul, and it's got to be from the user. He's got to do it. She's
exactly.
Gotta do it.
They got to make up their mind. You know, it's like you, what you had to do, what I had to do. It's, do I want to change? It's what a lot of people don't realize, how much change they got to make, that they've been doing it for so long. There's a lot of change that's got to be made in there. You know, it's, you don't go in, you know, when they say playgrounds, people and all that, I mean, there's a lot more to it than that, you know, so.
Well, Mike, thank you very much for stopping by. We totally appreciate it. Well, we're out of time, folks. Remember, don't drink or use no matter what, and keep coming back.